I read it from a reputable green team site. This is from the CelticsBlog.com, right, Murray?
Correct.
Okay. Bobby Manning wrote this the other day, and it was just a survey of the players that came out of the third lottery position. Not the third pick, but the teams that started with the third lottery position and what happened. He said,
This is Cousin Anthony. Welcome to the Bobcast.
I'm going to bomb this.
So that's where I got it from, Dave, just by the way.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Bobcast here on CLNS Media. We're trying to get back into things this year, this month. Get a lot of shows out there on a variety of topics, so today we are really going off the grid. But it's a very important issue, it's a very important topic in America today, so I enlisted my good friend here at Syracuse, Jalen Nash, to join us, and it's good because I've been meaning to talk with him about his career, his journey. He is what major are you here?
Political science.
Political science. I was going to guess that, but then it would have sounded bad if I guessed wrong, but there we go. Political science student here, lives right upstairs from me, and we've been going at it for about a year now, friendship-wise. So let's get into it. There is a lot to talk about when it comes to politics today, in this week particularly because of the tragic events down in Florida. 17 dead in another school shooting, 18 school shootings just since the start of the year. There's a lot of semantics arguments about, you know, what's a mass shooting, what's a school shooting, what are we considering here, but 18 gun-related events in general around schools right now, and it's just been a nonstop spin cycle topic in politics and the national discussion for a long time. So we're going to get to that, but first of all, why politics? It seems like a messy thing to get into right now, but what drew you that way?
So I grew up, my mom went to Syracuse, so she's always very like educated. She always watched CNN, news, documentaries, stuff like that. So I kind of grew up in an environment that fostered me to care about politics because my mom's very political. As I got older, I just kind of got to see more of the world, have more experiences, and see more people in need. And I think, personally, the best way to do that is through politics because institutionally, a lot of things are going to need to change for us to get the change that we're asking for. And while, like, nonprofits and marches and protests are all good, I think having someone to go within the institution to change it from the inside is also important. So that's why.
So you've worked hands-on with the voting process at this point, gathering votes, doing data on voting, this and that. What has that been like? Because I think the fundamentalists, when it comes to politics, still believe in the power of that vote. Mm-hmm. Some other people don't feel so good about it. What do you think on that?
What do you mean? In terms of what?
You know, the power of the individual vote nowadays.
Do I think individual votes have power? Yes, yeah. I do think individual votes have power. A lot. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the time in that argument saying that votes don't have power, we kind of look at the people who are voting and kind of like stereotype them to be from a certain like socioeconomic background, a certain class. And while people from certain groups are more likely to vote, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're controlling the voter process if a lot of groups aren't voting. So like a lot of people feel like they're not being represented in their communities and their government, but they're also not voting. So I think you can't say your vote doesn't count if you don't want to vote. Because the best way to see it count is to vote.
So what's that process been like for you so far serving that role?
It's been dope. I've worked on like two campaigns so far. So like one over the summer I worked in Queens, and it was a city council campaign, and it was Queens. So the people, our constituents were very like low income. They were people of color. Not that there's a correlation between that, but like it just happened like that. Whereas the campaign I'm doing now is for Congress, so it's very like rich, white, suburban. So it's been very interesting to me to kind of see how important money is in campaigns and how race does play a role, but it's not as like blatant and insidious as you would think it is. Like it's not racist that if you're in a room full of 90% white people who are on the Democratic committee, like that's not racist. It just is what it is, but it can't have racist repercussions.
Implications. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you've been in those two environments, you've seen the power of money, and that's a hot topic of discussion now, is the ability that that money can have. Do you see a difference in the ability of people to you know, garner money from maybe those higher income communities rather than, you know, the people who aren't making as much money who aren't able to contribute to campaigns?
Well, yeah, because campaigns, in at least the first part of it, are all about fundraising, right? Mm-hmm. So you're going out as a campaign trying to contact everyone the campaign might know, the candidate might know, who can contribute to the campaign. So if you're running in a district where people don't have a lot of money, that means you're going to have less resources to run your campaign. And not that fundraising is bad. Like, you got to do what you got to do. That's how you make money to actually campaign. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of a catch-22 because you have to campaign. You want more money. But where is that money coming from? So, yeah.
Do you think campaigns are becoming too driven by money at this point? Because it does seem like that is the first initiative.
Too driven by money.
Mm-hmm.
I think right now a lot of campaigns, their philosophy is get as much money as we possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
So in the sense that maybe they can say we want $10,000 or we want an exit, we want to hit a budget and then kind of stop. I think to that extent, I think money is kind of messing up campaigns. But at the same time, I don't necessarily know if there's anything wrong as a campaign to want the most money, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. It's tricky because there's different levels to it too. You know, these big congressional races are going to be more money driven, and then the local levels, you know, there's still money involved there, but does it still feel like at those local levels, you know, policy and people are still driving things?
Definitely. It's just who those people are. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the times in the rhetoric, especially for Democrats right now, we have rhetoric against the elites and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like what we miss in that rhetoric is that the elites are still voters and they're still people who have an opinion and a voice.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like to say that because a campaign has a lot of high-income people that they're not representing people's voices isn't necessarily fair, because they are. They're just not representing all the voices, which I feel like is the bigger issue.
Yeah, so let's dive into that gun discussion, because I heard some, you know, there's a lot of takes out there this week on guns and everything else, and, you know, the problems, the power of money in that realm. You do hear a lot of people say that groups like the NRA do have, you know, a very powerful pull when it comes to an issue like that. But at the same time, these groups do, you know, reflect voter values and stuff like that. And even though, you know, whether you like it or not, there is a huge gun value in this country, for better or worse. Those groups have a powerful tug right now. Have you come in contact with, you know...
I haven't come into contact with groups like that, just because the campaigns I've done have been in New York.
Yeah.
More like... not gun places.
Well, not gun lobby groups in particular, but like, you know, any
they have stricter gun laws down here, so it's not the same.
Yeah, not talking gun groups in particular, but any policy groups, any groups pulling for any particular policy.
Well, there's a lot of environmental policy people up in upstate New York, just because like apparently the environmental stuff started here. So if you look at people running for Congress, a lot of them will put environment in their platform, whereas if they were in the city, they wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a good amount of lobbying groups. I think most of them in upstate New York are kind of for poor and disenfranchised, kind of that lane, not as much as like big money interests that I know of. I could be wrong.
Yeah.
Only 19, but yeah.
Well, you know, someone like me, very skeptical of that kind of thing. I think a lot of people have become skeptical of those lobbying groups, or the, you know, big groups in particular.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a little bit too much against them, or do they kind of deserve some of the flack they get for getting too much of the pull from a lot of politicians?
I think, kind of going back to the campaign thing, I think nothing is wrong with wanting to be the best or have the most, per se. It's just once you have that, kind of what do you do with it? So if you're a lobbying group and you have the most influence to make the most change, I don't think that in and of itself is bad. Because as lobbying group, that's what you want to do. To the constituents that are being represented, they're happy by that because that's what they want.
Mm-hmm.
I just think where lobbying groups mess up is fighting for the agenda so hard and not realizing that there can be more than one answer to the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're the NRA, if you're so caught up in just everyone could have a gun, you miss where it's important to compromise on issues for guns.
Mm-hmm.
You feel me?
Yeah.
What I'm trying to say? So I think... you can go too far in the lobbying and not see the big picture.
Yeah.
I think that's where lobbyists get in trouble.
Yeah, it's interesting because I did hear some people say this week, you know what, even though the NRA does have a big pull, there's a lot of, you know, one-issue voters out there. Like, they're, like, people who vote particularly just to hold on to gun rights, and that is the one thing they will hit or miss on. And, you know, if candidates don't cater to that, then those one issue people are going to go somewhere else. That's crazy now. It seems like every single time there's a big shooter, it's the same discussion. It's the same spin cycle. You know, some people compare it to Groundhog Day. Like, it's really the same, like, sequence of events right. after every single time this happens. I mean, what's to blame for this? There's a lot of blame being thrown around, whether it's the money, whether it's these big groups, whether it's just the culture of America. There's probably a lot of things at play here, but, like, this has to rank up pretty high among the issues in the country, period, at this point, doesn't it?
I agree. I think what concerns me about our national conversation around issues like school shootings is that it's very divisive, right? And I feel like at the end of the day, 17 kids getting shot shouldn't be a controversial issue.
Yeah.
Like, it shouldn't, like, I feel like, so some people will say it's mental health, some people will say it's a gun issue. I think it could be both. I don't think it's one or, like, I'm sure to go into a school and shoot 17 children, I feel like there has to be something wrong with you, just personally.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think saying he has a mental illness absolves the gun from all responsibility. So I think, just like I was saying with the lobbying, there's a healthy medium we can find that I feel like we're not trying to find right now. Because mm-hmm. Democrats are blaming Trump. Trump's blaming mental illness. And it's just kind of the same spin cycle.
Yeah, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of action in these periods either. And that's what people seem to be calling for. Oh. It seems like that, you know, when something exists like that, a problem exists, you'd expect government to be able to step in and hinder the function of that. Why do you think this issue in particular is so problematic with that?
I mean, I think people... I think it's very hard for a government to affect something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, you can close the gun show loophole, you can... There's a lot of stuff you can do to kind of prevent it, mm-hmm. but at its core, someone choosing on their own free will to go to a school and choose somebody, there's not much your mayor can really directly do about that.
Yeah.
So I think in that sense, we kind of give them too much flack, but I also do think they need to more actively, not just for school shootings, I don't think gun control is a school shooting issue, because millions of people, not millions, but hundreds of thousands of people are getting shot.
Yeah.
So I think the overall issue around guns is bigger than the school shooting section of it, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the government can do more about the overall issue of guns instead of just the school shooting, because that's kind of hard to do.
I think a big reason I wanted to bring you in here today was a lot of people feel hopeless about politics in the country. A lot of people think there's problems with politics in this country that just can't be solved. I think that's a big reason, like we said in the opener, some people just feel like voting is, you know, a hopeless case at this point. What do you think are some of the problems with politics that you know, might want to try to solve going forward? Because, you know, we see there's a lot of old people in Congress, there's a lot of old people in government positions, and it does feel like young people might be at a crossroads to be able to come in and try to change some of those things if they don't fully adapt to the system how it is. Do you have any particular problems you want to try to root out one day?
In terms of my life, I feel like a lot of the rooms I'm getting into as I'm kind of doing more campaign stuff and getting, like, higher up on the level, a lot of the times I'm the only person of color or the youngest person in the room. And I think my biggest mission would be to change that, because I think it's important. I think representation, regardless if you have the same like background or opinions, I think representation is super duper important.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of the reason why the policies, some people don't feel like the policies don't reflect them, is because they're not getting represented. And that doesn't mean that the people making the policies are trying to necessarily hurt them, or they're insidiously trying to make policies that don't help certain communities, but they're just not thinking about that. That's not on the top of their mind. If you're a white man from Alabama, you're probably not thinking about the black man from South Carolina. Mm-hmm. And that's not necessarily bad. It just kind of is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
The same way if I'm a black man from South Carolina, I'm not thinking about the white person from Alabama. So I think as I get older, my main thing will be representation.
Yeah.
And kind of just getting people within the process, because I think that's how you fix it.
Yeah, and I do feel like a lot of young people feel that way and feel like that's an important thing to accomplish. I just worry about the system. You know, a lot of the system is geared toward, you know, keeping the status quo. It feels like, you know, you got issues like gerrymandering and, you know, other political issues that seem to, you know, charge against change. So maybe you have some young people coming in that want to change the system a little bit, but the system makes it hard to change. I mean, that, I feel like that's an issue. Do you think values that young people can come in with can change that issue?
I definitely think so. I think that the fact that our government and policies are kind of hard to change, while there's certain instances where that's bad, I think mm-hmm. generally that's a good thing. Because, like I said, we're young people, so we have all these ideas, but the problem with young people is a lot of times we don't have the wisdom or the experience or the know-how to kind of enact those ideas.
Yeah.
So I can say I want to have better education systems, I can do X, Y, Z, but without the knowledge, without 25 years of experience in the education sector, I can't really tell you what those policies are.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a big a barrier to entry for us.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that it's important that regardless, we try to join, maybe not run, but join your local nonprofit, join your local like committee or your chair. Like, there's a lot of ways you can get involved, mm-hmm. which aren't stepping into national politics.
I like that. I like that response a lot. And so, if someone, you know, beyond the semantics, beyond the arguments back and forth, that, you know, wanted to get in the politics and wanted to, you know, create change with this gun debate, what do you think would be the route to do that? I mean, obviously, one person's not going to solve the biggest issue in America or right up there, but I mean,
I would say just Google it. Like, if you really care about gun protections, I'm sure you can look up somewhere right now an advocacy group that fights for stricter gun laws, mm-hmm. and you can join them. I think a lot of the problems that we have are problems that we could fix if we just, like, you got to work hard for stuff.
Yeah.
So you can't be passionate about something and not want to work hard for it and then be mad when it doesn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you really care about the issue, I think there's a lot of easy ways. You can research it, know who's doing it, and go do it.
That's Jalen Nash with us here. What's your Twitter?
Yes, sir. JA_Nash3. That's my Twitter.
So give this guy a follow. He talks a lot of basketball too. You know, we'll get to basketball in just a second. But we were talking about the media response to this, and you know, social media has become a big thing too when it's come to this gun issue, because there's such a spin cycle of news now in that every single day something happens, especially with Trump too, who, you know, as president has really made it an issue to control the dialogue of day to day. Anytime he says something, it feels like he can take over the news cycle. And then you put something like this on the back burner, because I think we all know that in 2 weeks at the least, maybe 3 weeks, people are going to start to forget about this, this issue that's firing everyone up right now. One thing we were talking about before we came on is that is this different or not? Because we've seen it before. People get angry for 2 to 3 days, then something else happens and they move on to the next thing. How big of a problem is that?
I think I kind of agree with the fact that people get upset about something and then are over it in 3 days. But I also think it's important that when we say that, we acknowledge the people who get upset about it and keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there is, again, like I was saying with the research thing, there is a bunch of people advocating for stricter gun laws. There's a bunch of people trying to fix the criminal justice system. Just because we don't see them and know about them doesn't necessarily mean people are mad and then, like, cool down.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if we kind of focus on the people really making that change and the people really, really committed to that, I think that, like, the average person obviously is kind of hot and cold, but there are people out there, a bunch of people who are diligently trying to change something.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they should get represented in the conversation as well.
Yeah, it's lasted quite a few days now, and that's why I said coming on is, like, this the point that people are going to be so fed up that they just start talking about this day in and day out and make a concerted effort to not forget about it, because 4 or 5 days later, wherever we're at now, it does feel like people are starting to, you know, just keep this going as far as they possibly can. I know I've made it an effort to, you know, tweet about this at least once a day.
Yeah.
But, you know, you do have to do a little bit more than just tweet or talk or, you know,
definitely
bring up the issue, right?
Definitely. I mean, it also depends, like, where you are in life, I think. A tweet, even though people are like, a tweet doesn't do anything, a tweet does hold power. Like, your tweet could go on someone's screen who never thought about it like that, or reach someone in a different country who never thought about it like that. I think tweets do have power and they are an action. I think it's important that if you can, you act more than a tweet, but I think a lot of the times we say, oh, you just tweeted, you didn't do anything, but like you did do something. Mm-hmm. You just didn't do it in the way other people might have liked it. Mm-hmm. So I think Twitter is important. If you can get involved, if you have the resources, give money. Like there's a lot to do.
I'm glad to hear some optimism here, because I think we're going backwards before we're going forwards, which is, you know, how it goes. That's just my opinion. But we'll see what happens. And I'm glad there's someone like you out there that has some good ideas to move forward toward this.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
So going forward, you know, you've worked with the mayor here in Syracuse. You've worked back in New York City with campaigns, worked with votes, worked with money. What are you trying to? What do you want to make your next step? Just keep getting opportunities in the field and seeing how it works.
Honestly, I was thinking about this like the last few days. I think I want to make a nonprofit. Mm-hmm. To a lot of people aren't registered to vote because, like you saw in the last election, the turnout was like 52 or 55 or something. And a lot of people either don't vote or don't get registered to vote. And I was talking earlier about representation.
Yeah.
Like that's really important to me. So I think I want to find a way to make a nonprofit in the city of Syracuse to kind of get people involved.
That is always killing me personally. I've been up on politics for a while and history in general. And I think one of the recurring problems in this country going way back is the difficulty of getting out to vote. And, you know, if you really make the effort, of course you can do it. But there's a lot of little hurdles they put in there that for, you know, everyday people that make it a little harder. State by state, it's different, too. I think that is a real defining feature of this country is that every state has its own rules when it comes to voting, even though it's a national thing. There's, you know, different states. It's easier in some places, harder in other places. I personally, as a voter, feel like that's something I want to see change going forward. In fact, if I had my way, I think I'd have every person automatically registered to vote. You know, that might be unrealistic, but what do you think? Is it on the voters? Is it on the government to make it easier for people to vote when it comes to lower turnouts?
I think it's both. I think a lot of the times what we miss with, like, democracy is that it's, like, a two-sided process.
Yeah. So
there's the citizen and the state. The state's supposed to provide for the citizen. At the same time, the citizen's supposed to provide and give input to the state. So I think it's kind of both of us. Both, if you're just sitting in your house on election day watching TV, not voting, that's on you. But I also think the government, there's a lot of people that don't know how to register. There's a lot of people that are afraid of the government to like go to an agency and say, here's my ID. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people who feel like because Donald Trump is saying wild stuff on Twitter that they don't belong in this country, so they don't want to get involved. So I think there's a lot of issues on both sides that prevent people from voting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have to work together to kind of fix that. But the blame's not all on one side.
Yeah, I just think that is one of the underrated issues in this country is the fact that in some places it really is hard to get access to vote. You got to go miles to get a certain ID, you got to do this and that. There's an amendment against the poll tax, but decades ago that was a similar issue, and it feels like we're going back on that too.
If you have to spend $10, it's still a poll tax.
Yeah.
Regardless of getting it directly or indirectly.
That is true, and you know, that was one of the more frustrating things the Supreme Court did over the last 10 years, I think, is the fact that they rolled back on the Voting Rights Act back in the 60s that gave the federal government overwatch on the states. If they were making it too hard to vote, they'd step in and repeal some of those laws, and they got rid of that. And I still wonder, you know, they say the conditions back in the 60s where states would notoriously try to hinder people's right to vote are gone. And then I say, you know, when the Supreme Court gets rid of that, and then, like, days later, states start enacting those, like, you know, the conditions are still there. Like, they just popped right back up.
Yeah, that's why it's important to get involved. Like I said, nonprofits. I want to do a nonprofit, but I'm sure there's Project Vote that's a nonprofit that kind of does similar things. I could give you more. I just have to think about it.
Yeah.
There's definitely groups that do that kind of stuff that you guys should definitely get involved in before my show pops up.
Good conversation here. Let's talk basketball because we're in the All-Star weekend out in LA.
Sir.
That's your team, the Lakers.
Yes, sir.
How did a New Jersey boy become a West Coast basketball fan?
That's funny. I think I remember the first basketball memory I have was Lakers Celtics in like 2009.
Same here.
It was the year we lost. And I just saw how bad Kobe wanted it. Like, he lost, but I could tell he was, like, mad. He was trying to win. He was trying to score all the points by himself. And I feel like growing up, I was very like that. So I think me and Kobe have a lot in common. But, like,
I don't know if you'd want a lot in common with Kobe, to be honest.
But, like, I think how bad he wants it is something I really, really admire, and his work ethic. So that's why I'm a Laker fan.
And there you go. So how are they looking this year?
We're not looking that good. Our defense sucks. But in, like, 2 years when Ingram's older, Kuzma's older, Zoe is older, hopefully we keep Randall. In a few years, we'll be good. I'm confident.
Do you think LeVar Ball is going to throw this team's trajectory off?
Honestly, I didn't think so. I saw in the news he said like something about like if you don't, something about Alonzo's not going to resign if the Lakers do anything.
Yeah, that was crazy. I think what he specifically said is that once Alonzo becomes a free agent, he's not signing with any team unless they take LiAngelo LaMelo or something to that effect.
I don't know if he actually said that. Hopefully he did it, but like, I think he has to be careful because I feel like the Lakers have a lot of pride. Mm-hmm. And, like, the Lakers are one of the few teams that will dead cut Lonzo. Like, I think Magic isn't going to just let Lonzo, like, run the team. So I think he should be careful. Like, it's not the Kings.
Yeah. Like, it's crazy that he's actually been able to penetrate the locker room. And you had the issue with Luke Walton when he called for his job. You had the issue where journalists were trying to interview LeVar in the front rows of the games.
Yeah.
And then eventually the Lakers just threw him out. I mean, that is a hard situation to handle because I think, I would say Lonzo feels committed to his dad. I mean, he just released that album with his dad.
His dad on the cover is crazy.
So I think there's a good relationship there between those two. And I think Lonzo does know his dad's a bit wacky, but at the same time, like, I think he stands by the stuff he says and he stands by the pride that he has in him. And that doesn't bode well for the Lakers as a team.
I agree. I think Laker fans are used to Kobe, so we already had the superstar. So, like, I think he's trying to become, like, the super. It's just weird because it's the Lakers. Like, we're used to a certain type of star, and Zoe isn't really that. And I feel like LeVar is trying to make him that superstar, which is, like, cool, but, like, it's kind of disrespectful.
Mm-hmm.
So I would advise him to stop.
So you were pumped about Isaiah. It's good to see someone who's so happy about Isaiah Thomas coming in because I have notoriously stood by Thomas strongly through this, and Celtics fans overwhelmingly have been just surprisingly happy to see this guy not thrive post-Boston. I mean, of course he was playing for the Cavaliers, one of the chief competitors of that team, but
it wasn't his fault.
Yeah, I know. Like, 15 games in, the Cavaliers said they were going to be patient with him. That certainly was not the case, and now he's out in L.A. You were happy to see it, huh?
Yeah, I was happy to see it because I think IT's a great player. I think he's a top. Maybe I'm going to hold off on that. I think he's a really good player.
And you would have been on the record with that one.
I think IT's a really. I don't know. Our defense is really bad, and he doesn't have that at all, like whatsoever. I think the Pelicans had like 100 at the start of the third the other day. Dallas had like 90. Our defense is trash. But I like IT.
Is this his landing spot long term?
I don't think so. I don't see him fitting on the Lakers if he's not coming off the bench.
Yeah.
Because as much, like, I'm cool with him playing two this year because, like, we're not going to make the playoffs, so, like, we can have fun and, like, do whatever. But when it comes to, like, playoff time, I think unless he wants to come off the bench, I don't really know. Because Lonzo has to play point.
It'll be interesting to see what his value is this summer. Of course, if he went the free agency after last year, he would have made the max. At this point, who knows? Yeah. And especially with him just having fun out in L.A., as you said, maybe that value's dipping a bit. And there's a lot of big free agents out there, too. Yes, and the Lakers, as we know from Twitter, lots of Photoshops, lots of dreams of big free agents. LeBron's probably out the window at this point, don't you think? But
I don't want LeBron.
You don't want LeBron.
No, I feel like any Laker fan who wants LeBron isn't a real Laker fan.
Why is that?
Because we grew up loving Kobe, and Kobe and LeBron was like the beef growing up. So we can't just have LeBron now. Like, it would be disloyal.
He would put you right next to the NBA Finals, though, so that's got to be tempting.
I would rather not win the Finals than have a honestly, like, I'd be so conflicted if LeBron was on the Lakers.
All right, that is Jalen Nash. I think we'll wrap it up right there. Good discussion today. I think we could have talked about a million more things when it comes to a nuanced issue like this, and it's never as simple as we leave it. So I think a half hour trying to dive a little bit deeper was worth it.
Right.
And we'll continue to see what you're doing and have you back as a friend of the Bobcast regularly,
I think. Yes, sir. I appreciate you having me. Everybody listen to the Bobcast. He's working hard on this, doing his thing. Tune in.
Yeah, so at the Bobcast Show is where you can find it. Plenty of good episodes floating around, as I've said. Been trying to get some of these recordings that I've been doing out. And hopefully the show just keeps rolling because I haven't had as much time to work on it as I want to, but should. I think I should, because people seem to enjoy this, and hopefully they do. That's the show. Podcast. Until next time, we'll see who we have next. But for now, this has been Jalen Nash and Bobby Manning.
So that's where I got it from, Dave.